before Kendrick Morales, I'll get to this position discussion that I wanted to talk about. Now, Morales going later, and Tony, you said it refers to that position, right? Just being eligible for now at the utility position. We're seeing a guy that could hit 25 home runs, as Scott said, bat 270, bunch of RBIs, better spot here in Toronto. If he was, let's say, first base eligible, would he go five rounds earlier?
He'd probably go four or five rounds earlier.
Okay.
So what happens, you get to like the eighth, ninth round of your draft, right? The first thing you're looking down at your team and you're saying, what position do I need to fill? And it's just, everybody does it. And it's in your mind, well, I need to get a second baseman. I'm running low on second baseman. I need to get a middle infielder. Nobody ever says, I need a utility position guy. And so I think it's just changing the mindset of people that's why the utility position is there. Often, one of the greatest moves you could ever make in an auction is put David Ortiz back when he was playing as the first player you nominate, and you'd get him for $4 or $5 later because nobody wants to take a utility position with the first pick in a draft or an auction.
So I'm really, really, really glad you brought that point up, right? Because you're constructing your roster, fifth, sixth, seventh round, whatever, and you look at your team, and you're like, all right, you know, I need a second baseman, the second baseman are going, I need a third baseman, the third baseman are going. And that is when position scarcity sneaks into your mind. Scotty, you have been a massive proponent of telling me position scarcity does not matter. You know, you take the best player available every single time, regardless of position. Mm-hmm. And I sit here and I wonder, like, I am like Tony, exactly what Tony just mentioned, where I am looking at my roster, and I see, we'll use second baseman. There's a ton of second baseman. We'll use second baseman as the example. We see my second base slot is open. There is a million second basemen that are just flying off the board. We've had that second base running. I didn't get any. To me, I admit it. Like, it comes into me. Like, I better get a second baseman.
No, I'm not going to tell you that I'm in the 10th round that I ignore it. You know,
but
early
it.
In the draft, you know, it's... what I'm saying is that I lean more towards, especially early in the draft, first three, four rounds, I'm not looking at position, maybe even the first five. But, you know, as I get later in the draft, you know, you naturally have to look at that. I think I start out not looking at it at all, but then it sort of climbs as a draft because then you're around 18 and you still don't have a middle infielder. You have to fill the spot. But I'm always going to lean in the direction, whereas if I still got an open spot for the guy that has better numbers, I'm going to take him over the position of need. Whereas to Tony's point is, you know, I would always go after Ortiz because, you know, I don't care that I freeze up my utility spot. Look at those damn numbers.
I am with you. The Kendrick Morales as a utility player, like he, Tony just described, he'd probably go four or five rounds later, best player available. Corey, are you able to stomach doing that? You don't have a second baseman yet, right? You're four or five rounds earlier. You're seeing the second baseman fly off the board, and you're going to fill your utility spot?
I think it boils down to, you have to know the player pool. You have to be drafting, and this way you know where the drop-off comes at each position. So if you go in there prepared, knowing what you're doing, you can't predict the draft, but have a good idea how the draft is going to shake out, then you know where your guys are going to land at, and that's how you can make a reach on a player that can give you 30 bombs, but it has to top your utility spot. You know second baseman is deep. You know it's a drop-off in the tier in first base. So I think it all depends on how draft strategy goes and your roster construction and your experience level of playing and your preparation level. So as far as what I would personally do, it's going to be difficult for me to do it. I would say right now it is because I'm not I'm not an experienced player.
Sure, I understand that. But as Tony has described, you're making your projections out. You can project 25 home runs, let's say, from Kendrick Morales, like very, very safely.
Yeah.
You're going to worry about that position then. So position scarcity is a thing for you.
It comes into play, yeah.
It comes into play.
I feel comfortable and confident that I can get the guys later on to, you know, the middle infielders and the corner infielders and stuff like that. I think we'll talk about some of that later on.
Right.
So if I sat down today, right now.
Yes.
No. 2 weeks from now.
Maybe.
Quite possibly, maybe. Yes.
Okay. We mentioned earlier this week, I don't remember if it was yesterday or Monday, about like the NFL draft, right? Every team says, I'm taking the best player available, right? Best player available. I said that's BS because what they're really doing is taking the best player available that fills a need. And I think in fantasy drafts, like, that is how I draft. Like, I'm taking the best player available in my mind, sure, kind of. But I'm really taking Tony a player that fits my team. Like, you're looking at, we talk every single day here about roster construction. And there's times, right, you may the first four picks, 25 home runs, no speed, right? So in round five, D. Gordon may be your best player available, let's say, because he fits a need on your team, not necessarily a position, but like a need statistically, but he's not really the best player available.
No.
So when we're talking, I guess, position scarcity, maybe we should also call it statistical scarcity in a way with speed in that matter, because you're not taking the best player available. You're taking the player that fits your team.
And that's in the draft. But you can't, what do you know coming into a draft? What, do you know what spot you're drafting from? Or do you get that designation like before the draft starts?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I usually know where I'm drafting.
So if you know where you're drafting from, then you can kind of put it together in your head and stuff,
sure,
like that.
Absolutely.
And you can see if you could take that risk. Now, when you're in an auction, like Tony said, yeah, Kendrick Morales is somebody that you go for.
Right.
Because you can pay
a really cheaper big price. Discount.
You can get a discount for those kind of statistics, and you're still able to put your team together the way you want to.
Tony, when it comes to position scarcity, like, are you someone that takes the best player available for real, or the best player available that fills a need?
See, Scott, I think Scott hit it on the head. For the first five or six rounds, you take the best player available. So, and then you have your numbers added up, and then you decide what you need to attack, right? So if I go five or six rounds, say I probably have two starting pitches, I probably have four hitters at that point.
Right.
And then I got to see, am I lacking stolen bases? Am I lacking home runs? And after round six, that's going to dictate what I'm going to do. Perfect scenario is, say, like using the second base scenario.
Yep.
I take Kendrick Morales in round 10, let's just say. And I get 25 home runs, but I get no stolen bases.
Sure.
So I gain four home runs because I need 21 home runs from each hitter. But I lost out on stolen bases. So that would dictate me taking Josh Harrison, probably my next pick, who had only four home runs but had 19 stolen bases and will be there later. And so I think once you get past round 10 is really where the statistics come into play. But you try to pick the best player for the first six rounds.
You know, it's interesting.
That's why I would never pick D. Gordon and never pick Billy Hamilton, because they're never the best player.
I think about it, you know, and wanted to hear what Tony thought about this, because he laid this out on the fantasy baseball special that he did. When you're talking about, you need to get a certain amount of statistics,
sure,
you know, per position, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on. You know, I wanted to know how different people handle it, because the draft is flying fast and furious, especially in an auction. You know, and you got to sit there and calculate, bam, 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 bam. You know, it's like,
that's why you need to
add. You know, that's why that's one way to handle it, Corey. I wanted to hear what you guys thought about that.
The auction might be a little easier, in my opinion, because you don't bid on every player, right?
Right.
I mean, there's been a times when I've gone an hour without bidding on a player, right? You're just sitting there. So you can keep track of it. But to Corey's case, I've tried that whole app thing, and I can't keep up.
Well, what do you do in a snake? You find it very hectic in a snake?
No, if I have one pick in the middle, I'm okay. When I'm on the ends, it's a little more hectic. Like when you have the two picks in a row, it becomes a little more hectic.
Right.
As I have said many, many times, I buying into Tony's theory that he spoke about on the baseball special, and as you just described, getting the stats. And I think what you guys have just said, Scotty and Tony here, of after the 10th round, really filling in statistical scarcities on your team is something that we have to take to heart here, right? That's when we go after those particular spots.
When you say, though, teams in the NFL draft will always draft for, you know, there's a lot of times that they take the best player. So I
don't believe that.
I mean, you know, look at the Titans. Did they really need to take Derrick Henry when they had DeMarco Murray?
Look at the Colts.
Yeah.
Well, the Colts are idiots. The Colts are idiots.
I agree.
The Colts are idiots.
I think sometimes, you know, a player's there and a team just can't pass on him because they have him so high rated on the draft board.
It's right.
I've heard and seen several instances of that, and people question, well, you needed this. Why did you take this? Well, he was just so high rated on the draft board, we couldn't believe he was still there.
So, listen.
And that's what happened with Kendrys Morales in a baseball draft or David Ortiz.
I agree with that, Scott. Like, there, it happens, right? Like, yeah. The value is just so great that you're taking the best player regardless of position. Completely agree with that. But for the most part, in a draft, right? Like, I'll go back to the Giants in last year's football draft. And the NFL draft is coming up end of April, so that's in our minds here. I'll go back to just a couple years ago, or last year, the Giants, right? They had all these offensive linemen rated high. Jack Conklin, who went to Tennessee, Larry Tunsil was off the board because of the weed thing, and another offensive lineman, I forget who it was. Like, now, of course, forgetting the dude's name, but whatever.
Right.
These are the guys that they had definitely higher than anybody else. And once all these guys, their top eight players were off the board, okay? Number nine, or whatever they picked, number 10, whatever pick they had, they took Eli Apple because that was the next guy on their board or whatever. And you cannot tell me that Eli Apple was the best player available at that spot, because he wasn't. Like, right. Eli Apple was a guy that, like, cornerback's the thing we believe in on this team. We're going to fit it in. So, to me, nobody really takes best player available. They take the best player available, fills a need. And I think
I think it depends on the team. I think, you know, I've seen years past where, like, you know, a guy is there and they just take him because he's so damn good, even though they might even be clogged up at the position necessarily. There are a lot of times that players, they do take him because of need, but I don't think they always do that.
There's no always.
There are a lot of times where just the guys on the board, it's like, you know, you went to Giants, I go to the Seahawks.
Yeah, of course.
They've needed offensive linemen
for years.
It wasn't until this year
right.
that they took an offensive lineman with their first pick.
But
previous drafts, they were taking guys, and I was going, well, they already have a guy at that position, but
right.
you know, Carroll was like, that's the best player available.
Right, but do you agree with that strategy? Because as you said, this team's needed an offensive lineman for years. I go back to the Giants, they need a linebacker for years, and yeah. I get furious that they don't take one. I'm sure you get
I think all of us naturally would want us to see them draft
a need.
For need.
Right.
Though.
I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. That's why I relate it to fantasy baseball.
Let's even look at Dallas in a way, and this could make a good debate. With that offensive line, does Dallas really need to take Ezekiel Elliott? There were Cowboy fans were like, you know, do we really need to take it? And no, they didn't. You couldn't pass on Elliott there.
But many people, Corey, had said Ezekiel Elliott, like, why is a running back going in the top five? And they're like, well, this guy is unlike any other running back, and it proved to me he's amazing.
Well, and then also he was also the Dallas Cowboys' best defender with his ability to eat up clock.
That's a good point.
So was DeMarco Murray 2 years ago.
Certainly. Certainly.
That's what I'm saying. You know,
Terry McFadden.
Yeah. Why do we, again, goes to the point. You know, Dallas could have waited until the second round and still got a very damn good running back. And maybe, you know, would have been better served to maybe take a defensive pick.
I get it. I get what
you're saying. A lot of Cowboy fans had said that.
No question. Yeah. No question about it. There's videos I made back in May saying this is useless. Ezekiel Elliott is a rookie. Blah blah blah. He's not gonna be any good. And then they're like, well, you watch them, like, oh, he's pretty good.
He is pretty good.
The fantasy baseball draft, I think, is, to me, it is similar in that way. Like, I think there's certain times where, like, the value is so great, you take a guy and you're like, you know what, I'll figure out where to put them in that, like, I don't care if I have my four outfielders and my top 10 picks or whatever, like, I'll figure it out because the value is too good.
Right. There's a lot of fans. That happens a lot in football with, like, less experienced players. It's like, they'll see a quarterback that's still there in, like, round nine, and they already have a quarterback, but they'll take him. Not that I advise it, but it happens.
Sure. So, given that value is too good, I'm there. But I am guilty of disagreeing with Tony or not following through with Tony, I should say, in looking position scarcity before that 10th round. Like, I will look at it and be like, you know what? I need a second baseman now. And I think what I need to be doing is looking at statistical scarcity rather than that position scarcity.
You know when people used to do it? Back in the late 90s when Mike Piazza and Ivan Rodriguez were putting up especially Piazza, as good as numbers, any offensive players, and catcher was so thin.
Yes.
That's when position scarcity came into vogue, because everybody wanted a Piazza in like the top two or three because he played catcher and he hit 40 home runs and he hit over 300, et cetera.
And I think we see that in football too, right? Like when Jimmy Graham and Rob Gronkowski were taken in the first round.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like, oh, whoa, yeah. I'm getting this amazing tight end and you're getting crap.
It never worked, though.
It never worked. It rarely, I don't want to say never. It rarely worked. So do you think, Corey, same question here when it comes to the tight end, if taking Buster Posey in, like, what, the second round or so, where you're going to have to take him, does that not work?
I've always been a guy to say, why not grab one of the top catchers when he's sitting right there?
What? But
everybody else is critical of it, so I got off it, you know what I'm saying, to be honest with you. But, I guess it's really the kind of the nature of both positions. The players stay banged up.
Yeah, the Buster Posey thing, though, if you take him, right, and this is just the guys that are right there in this cat, like Jonathan LaCroix would be like the next guy. You get 20 runs and 20 RBIs. You could get 20 runs and 20 RBIs, the normal guys at that position. So he's a little different because he plays more in that game. And I think a lot of people don't want to take a catcher early because of the risk of the position. Like, they feel there's more injuries at the catcher position. Mm-hmm. And I don't know necessarily if that's true. I mean, it makes sense to look at it. But if you look at Buster Posey, he's played 146, 150, 147, 148, 148 games. So where are the injuries?
But how many times a week is he squatting down behind the plate,
Buster Posey? Well, that doesn't matter. His
eligibility is there.
Because of the eligibility,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's actually better the more times he doesn't catch.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Remember, like when Carlos Santana stopped playing catcher and he qualified the next year, even though he wasn't playing catcher.
So once again, why is it such a bad idea to take Posey early?
I think because when you look at it, he's hitting 15, 18 home runs. He doesn't bring you a big like double-digit stolen bases. So no other play. If you just take the name, if you take the position off that, he's going to have the lowest numbers of anyone picked in the second round.
That makes sense.
But
exactly.
The way you look at it is that, all right, now let me take that out and say, hey, let me compare it to every other catcher that's going to be picked after him, and that's where I gain an advantage. So I could see both arguments there, and that's why I don't draft him that early, is because there's a huge difference between the numbers being picked in that round and what you get with Buster.
What about in the auction?
In the auction, it would all depend on the price. If you threw him out there early, the earlier you throw them out there, I think the cheaper you're going to get them, because people are afraid to spend big money in the first few picks unless it's Bryce Harper or Mike Trout. Like, they say, man, I'm not going to go $30 on a guy like this, Buster Posey, because they're being conservative. But you're in auctions. It only takes one guy. If one guy's out there throwing money like crazy, you don't get him.
Yeah, I think when it comes to those types of guys, Buster Posey, Kendrys Morales, David Ortiz, for instance, there's questions. And that's even a little different than the non-sexy guy, like Matt Carpenter, like they're sexy versus not sexy. Now, this falls into even another thing with position scarcity and the ability to play every day, and your emphasis on a certain position when it comes to the catcher. A lot more question marks would do in an auction, make it a viable play to throw him out there early.